You're listening to the What Happens Now podcast with me, Mike Oldham. Everyone's been affected by the coronavirus outbreak in many different ways. We don't want to focus on the negatives, so I'm going to do my best to bring a little bit of positivity your way by speaking to a different guest each week about the positives that might arise out of this whole situation. I'm certainly not alone in having my career impacted by this pandemic. In the UK, more than 7.5 million people have been furloughed, which is around a third of the workforce in the private sector, and the government expect that that's going to cost them around £80 billion or more. From August, it's looking likely that the companies that have furloughed staff are going to have to start contributing to these people's salaries again. And at that point, who knows how many of them are going to have to start making cuts. Unfortunately, it's actually quite likely that from a jobs point of view, we're nowhere near the worst of it yet. But while people have been furloughed, or even if they're working but doing so from home more, this crisis has provided an opportunity for them to reflect on their careers. And since it's been such a dramatic catalyst for change, there are bound to be opportunities for people to change direction in their work. So as always, I'm looking for the positives, and today we're going to be talking about the jobs market and what kind of jobs are going to be in high demand as we emerge from this crisis. My guest is someone who knows all about forging an opportunity out of a crisis. She's also got her finger right on the pulse of the jobs market. She's the founder of a recruitment agency called Stopgap. Welcome to the podcast, Claire Owen. Hello, Claire. How are things going?
Oh, hi, Mike. Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm sorry the sun's not shining today, but apart from that, life's all right.
Good, good. And how do you think things are going? I mean, it feels a little bit like now we're kind of heading towards June. The government seemed to be dropping some of the restrictions. Do you feel in your area of expertise and in recruitment, do you think things are easing slightly, or does it still feel like we're in kind of peak crisis?
I think it's still wading through treacle. I had a few green shoots the week before last, and I was thinking, okay, this is great, but that hasn't continued. So I think there's still a massive amount of nervousness. When companies understand what the new furlough scheme is going to mean for them, then I think that might change and encourage people to pick up on the recruitment. But it's pretty quiet out there.
Okay, so I think it would probably be great to begin by, I guess, telling us a little bit about Stopgap, your recruitment agency, how it came to exist, and I guess what made you go into recruitment.
Oh gosh, that's a long old story. So the funny thing is that I started the business in 1992, which was, gosh, how many recessions ago? Three, four recessions ago, and I was working in a marketing agency, and the agency went into receivership because the bank pulled the plug, and I had no job. I had a four-week-old baby, and I was working in a marketing agency, and the client said, gosh, we've just lost our agency. And I said, well, don't panic. I'll provide you with a stopgap. So that was what we did. We finished off the promotion that we were working on. And I thought to myself, there's some mileage in what we've just done for this client by providing them with short-term marketing support. Maybe there'll be other clients who want the same thing. But I knew that I didn't want to carry on being the person delivering the marketing. So I did sort of some funny old research, which involved me talking to a few mates to say, if you could get hold of a freelance account manager or freelance marketing manager, would that interest you? And enough people at the back end of 92, 93 said, yeah, it would. So officially, we opened the doors for business in March 93. As a candidate, I had had pretty dire personal experiences of working with recruiters, and having spent the first 5 years of my life working in client servicing in marketing agencies, I just thought, why can't we put those sort of good client service practices into play in the recruitment space? So I set up not knowing anything about recruitment. And in fact, for the first 2 years, when people said, what business are you in? I'd say, sort of marketing services. You know, we support the marketing industry, because I just thought, I can't say I'm in recruitment. So we've worked really hard for 27 years just to do it a bit differently.
And you mentioned the previous recessions that you've gone through. How does this situation compare to those, do you think?
Oh, this is so different because it's so fast. So I remember the 2008 recession, and we work across all business sectors. And retail is usually the first thing that suffers. And so in early 2008, our retail business started to go a bit quiet. So everything fell off the cliff in October 2008. But we'd had 9 months, 10 months of seeing a decline in our business. This time, everything's ticking along really nicely. And come the 17th or 18th or 19th of March, we lost 80% of our business.
Was it literally? I mean, how does it work? What would be a kind of indicator that everything was stopping?
Well, we had close on 200 briefs, 200 live roles that we were recruiting for, and we would either call the client to organise the interview, or the client would call us and say, "I'm sorry, the job's on hold." And that it started that week, and then continued probably for the next week. By the beginning of April, which was when we furloughed our staff, we were down to 40 roles.
And what do you do? Because it's not, in most situations, you would kind of think, okay, how do we kind of attack this? We've got a different set of circumstances. We need to change our approach. But if all the companies that you're working with are literally putting their jobs on hold, it's not like you can just choose other companies, because they'll have done the same. So how do you approach that?
we furloughed our staff. I mean, we didn't have, thank goodness for that program, for the scheme, because we didn't have the work. And so I said, well, if we're going to be here when this is all over, then we need to look after the pennies. And so furloughing staff has enabled us to carry on operating. You can't magic jobs out of thin air. If people aren't recruiting, they're not recruiting. I mean, we worked in the retail sector, the hospitality sector, the travel sector. So it's tough. It's really tough. And it's the same for so many businesses.
And how do you even begin to prepare for when your staff are no longer furloughed, they're coming back to work? And will it have to be different? Will your approach change for that, for as things do, as the tightening of the measures is kind of loosened, and as people do go back to work, and as companies maybe do start to think about hiring again? Is there anything that you'll be doing different, or will you be going straight back into it the same way you were?
It's an interesting one, Mike, that, because I'm planning for a different world, because I think it is going to be different. I mean, there are all sorts of things. Just the remote working as a starter for 10. I think. Well, was it yesterday that Facebook, talking about, they reckon, 75% of their people are going to be working remotely. So I think from us as a business and our clients, they're not going to be all office based. And I think what that makes it interesting from a recruitment perspective, a lot of people, they make a decision as to whether they're going to interview somebody based on a CV. And then whether somebody gets hired or not is not just down to their skills and their expertise, it's down to the fit. If people are going to be working more remotely, how important is that fit going to be? I was thinking about it this morning. I was having a chat with somebody as I was on my walk. We were just talking about the changes. So one of the, we do live in a world that has quite a lot of biases, and they discriminate against all sorts of things. And one of the discriminators is age. I do quite forget whether I'm in my mid or my late 50s. It's one of those. I think it's probably late 50s. And I look at myself, yeah, and I think, gosh, well, I don't think I behave any differently to a 28-year-old. So when I see people who are in their 50s and 60s, and they're saying to me, that we struggle, and it's because companies say, well, culturally, they're not right. Because, do you know what? Somebody who is, do I want to go to the pub as much as the 28-year-old? Well, some maybe I do. But,
maybe.
No, maybe I do. But the things that I'm talking about that interest me are not the same as a 28-year-old.
No, exactly, so, yeah.
But if I am brilliant at my job and I'm actually going to be working from home for 4 days a week or 5 days a week or whatever is the majority of the time, the necessity to have that fit piece is maybe not there, which I think is going to, I'm hoping that it's going to make for better diversification, because I don't need to have somebody in the office who's got the same interests, because they're not going to be in the office.
And actually, it might also come down to productivity. How productive is someone remote working? Personally, I really kind of thrive in a social environment and where I'm interacting with people physically. So that's going to be a real challenge for people like me if I'm going to be forced. I mean, I don't have a job right now, but if I was working in a team where I'm working remotely the majority of the time, I think that would bring new challenges to me.
I think there'll be the choice. You know, so when we go back to the office, we have a totally flexible working policy now, which actually, ironically, we introduced in March, which basically said, you choose when you come into the office. All we asked was that everybody is in the office for our Wednesday meeting. But you know what? I'm now changing that to be thinking, as long as you are in, be it via Zoom or in person, then that's fine. And it's when I'm going to be interviewing somebody going forward, it will be a question. Do you want to be a remote worker or do you want to be in the office? There are people like you, Mike, who thrive on physical, on interaction with their colleagues. They love it and they don't work well at home. In fact, one of our candidates lost his job because he just didn't have the discipline to do the working from home. And the person that employed him had said, if this COVID-19 hadn't happened and he'd been in the office, we probably would still be employing him. So I honestly think there will be people who work for the same company, who have the same beliefs, who have the same commitment. But this person says, I'm going to work remotely. And it could be a physical thing. So it could be that actually, so we have somebody who works remotely from Cheshire. She is one of our most successful consultants because her family are in Cheshire and she chooses to work there. So that's evidence that she doesn't need to be in the office to be brilliant at what she does with us. And I was talking to this, as I say, this person today, and we were talking about the stress and the time wasted commuting, which they don't need to do. And actually, I think there are some people who are more effective working from home and there are others who are less. So when you're doing your recruitment, it doesn't matter. It's your choice.
I went for a job in just before I was due to start that job in March. I actually had another job that I'd been offered. And in the kind of negotiation process of thinking about accepting or not accepting the role, they kind of made me an offer. And then my response was, what is your policy on remote working? And they gave me an incredibly cold response in terms of, I think if you're looking at remote working, you're not maybe understanding the gravity of the role that you're going for. And just in this short time, that was in February, we're now in May, and they must be thinking, God, we're going to have to rethink that policy. One of the things I've always found really frustrating about recruitment, and I would say in London it's especially challenging, is that the kind of hoops that you jump through as the candidate are that you get in touch. Let's say you find a job posting, you get in touch, somebody comes back to you and says, yeah, I'd love to chat to you about further about the role. So you then have a call for, let's say, 20 minutes, half an hour. You just describe your experiences and your skills and your strengths. And then what tends to happen is the agency usually then say, you know, this has been great, let's have a chat in person. And I understand it's mostly about kind of those final checks and getting you set up on the system and getting your passport scanned and all that stuff. But you tend to go through the same half hour chat. And bear in mind, you know, we're in Southwest London. Sometimes that chat at an agency might be in Northeast London or Northwest London or out in Brentford in West London or somewhere like that. That stage in the process is not something that I'll miss as a candidate, I would say.
But I think, you know, I've been an advocate for meeting candidates face to face for years. In the old days, we used to meet two candidates a day, all of us. And this goes back to what I was saying a minute ago, because for me, the fit is absolutely imperative. It was. And there's that sort of caveat now if people are going to be remote working, because I would be able to say to a client, trust me, you're going to love Mike. Yeah, forget the CV. I know he's not done that. I know he's not done this, but culturally, he's right for your business. And that's what I could never get with a phone call. So that's me. I'm old school. And I like to see people. But to be honest, if I was interviewing you now, I'm as comfortable with me understanding the cultural fit piece, doing it over Zoom or over Skype. But what we found over the last probably 5, 6, 7, 8 years, that candidates were more and more reluctant to come in and have that face to face, because for the reasons that you were saying. And but then what happens is then everything ends up just being via email. And then you're just a piece of paper. And I hate a CV. It's one of my pet hates. I absolutely loathe them, because how can you, you know, judge a book by its cover? Why, just because Mike's got this in his CV, does that mean he's going to be right for the job? All it tells you is what he's done in the past. If we can't give clients something over and above what they see in a CV, what's the value of us as a recruiter?
It makes me think instantly, well, why not video CV? But then that doesn't work for everyone. Not everyone's great at that kind of thing. And it's frustrating, because it feels like there's a gap. CVs, I think a CV's got value. You know, it does record what you've done. It's a very subjective thing, but it outlines your experience and your skill set. But there does seem to be a bit of a gap. I think there's a reason that the CV has endured, but there does also seem to be a gap for something else at the same time.
Yeah, it's about the personality that struggles. I mean, I think some people are doing some really good things with their CVs that gives just some extra insight into their creativity. But you're right about the video thing. We use a video platform called Hinterview, and I've seen some people perform brilliantly on it, and other people just freeze in front of the camera. But because we've all been in front of the Zoom camera or the Skype camera over the last 2 months, you know, whether it's in a formal business sense, or it's just having a Zoom or a FaceTime with your mum or your dad or your friends or whatever, I think people are going to become more comfortable in front of the camera, which is good. So I think, you know, one of the changes will be, I think ironically, more interviews will take place with candidates from a recruitment perspective, but they will all be via Zoom. So there will be no requirement for you to have to schlep across to Richmond or up to Northeast London for an interview.
Have you had any situations or success stories or anything that you've experienced or your team have experienced? You know, have you found any kind of golden nuggets amongst the debris and managed to find people jobs? Have you got any stories like that from recently?
One of the things that we've been doing is we've started an initiative called Freelance. So putting the free back into freelance. And we had so many candidates who were furloughed or out of work who were desperate to do something just to keep their mind going. And they said, look, I'd rather do something for free than do nothing. So we've got a bank of about 225, 250 people who are available. And we've now got about, at the moment, I think 8 and 2 more hopefully coming to doing, who are giving their time free, predominantly to charities. I'm not worried if it wasn't a charity. If somebody can't employ, if they're not allowed to employ somebody, but they need marketing doing to keep their business going, and if there's somebody out there that wants to give their time, then, well, you know, we will facilitate it. So there's no benefit for us. There's no fee from us. There's no charge from the candidate. But the feel-good factor, oh, my God, Mike, that when the client said, I'm under so much stress because I have got to do this marketing and I haven't got enough marketing expertise in my team, and I can get this from you for free, there was a palpable from the client and palpable excitement from the candidate. Now that, to me, that's the joy of this business. You know, we've made two people happy. Two people are less stressed because of something that we've done. So I think we're going to carry on doing that, which is great. We have got some clients who are still recruiting, just not very many. We've got maternity covers. We've got a head of marketing role that came in a few days ago because they've got a maternity cover, and it's an online retailer. So
I was going to ask, actually, what kind of roles have there been?
We've had technology, tech clients are still recruiting, technology, online, charity and education. But the tech, I think there was something like, of the vacancies that were live at the end of April, something like 35% of them were in the technology space. And typically, they say that accounts for normally about 15%.
And what about the actual candidates themselves? Are you noticing, for example, are people more willing to work in the technology sector when they haven't before, given that that's where the jobs are? Or even, do you get that information from candidates, that kind of level of information? And are they thinking about using this opportunity to change course?
Well, I think candidates always believe, as I do, in transferable skills. It's just clients tend not to. So yes, right. there are candidates who love working in fashion and retail, and that's their passion and that's where they'd love to stay. But there are an awful lot who've worked in fashion and retail and say, but I can see where the growth is in the techs and the startups. You know, there isn't a startup these days that isn't in technology. There's not getting many people that are going to be opening coffee shops over the next 6 or 9 months. So yes, I think the candidates are completely open to switching. Are there many people thinking as you're thinking about doing their own thing? Probably not. It's a very scary concept, jumping out of paid employment into self-employment. And at the end of the day, you've got to have the idea. You know, there might be a desire to do it, but unless you've got the idea that's going to make you money. I was talking to my son today. So one of the things, I don't know whether you know this, one of the things that we did during this was start up an online directory for food companies who delivered to your home. So I set up this business called clickfoodie.co.uk, and it's totally free for you and me to go and look, and it's totally free for the suppliers to go on there. In fact, none of the 400 suppliers know that they're on there at the moment. I've just put them on there. I haven't quite told them. They're fine, because why wouldn't they? Anyway, it transpires that one of my son's best friends, his soon-to-be wife, has set up a bakery business called Brooks Baking. And so she is now self-employed. She's baking brownies and she's mailing them out to anybody. She sourced the packaging. And so, yeah, so I think that's fantastically enterprising. She loved baking, and her friends and family said, oh my God, we really miss your Rocky Road brownies because we can't come and see you. So she said, I'll make them and mail them. Yeah, there are a few people out there thinking of doing their own thing, but you've got to have the idea.
If you do have the idea, would you, as someone who's done it, would you recommend it? What are the kind of benefits versus the challenges?
Oh God, the benefits are you make the decisions. You've got to be a risk taker. I think, you know, that's why I don't think self-employment is right for everybody, because it is scary. And you've got to be a bit of a workaholic. You've got to not be scared of hard work, because you can't turn around and go, oh, it's Saturday, I'm just going to stop thinking about things. So you never stop thinking. But if that whole idea excites you, then that's great. So I think you have to be a risk taker. You have to be prepared to be happy to think 24/7. But the potential rewards are ultimately you're starting a business that's more than a salary. When you're employed, you will only ever get your salary and your bonus. When you start a business, you have the potential to reap the rewards of profit.
I've got a really unfair question to ask you then. So imagine that you are, so you mentioned before that you were, the company you worked for went into receivership, I think, when you had a young baby. Imagine you were in that situation now, in the coronavirus crisis. And I know this is very hypothetical, but do you think you would go into recruitment and doing what you're doing now? Or if you were going to start from scratch, what do you think you would do?
No, I wouldn't start up a recruitment business. I spoke to somebody the other day who'd started up, and I said, blimey, you know, that's brave.
What a time to do it, yeah.
What a time to do it. So no, I don't think I would do, you know, a traditional recruitment business. But I've always been an entrepreneur. So when I was 16, this was a long time ago, believe it or not, if you wanted your ears pierced, you had them done at the doctor's. And my dad was a doctor. And in the Lancet magazine, they were selling pierced earring kits. So I bought some. And in the girls' loo at school, I was piercing people's ears. Okay.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know. So that was at 16. So it's, and then I've had all sorts of, I've had a business called Brighter Baskets. I was painting baskets and selling them at Merton Abbey Mills Market. I set up a business called Orinoco Trading. I've got more domain names than most women have handbags or shoes. Okay. I collect them. That's just me. So yes, I would have, because I have so many ideas. I have so many ideas that I've got the domain names for that I would have started something. But that's just me. And there are other people out there like me who have, you know, got their domain names and their ideas. Now is the best time to make it happen because you've got absolutely nothing to lose. So either you are like yourself and you're out of work and jobs are in short supply at the moment, so you might secure a job, but you're up against an awful lot of other people. Or if you're furloughed, then completely legitimately, you can explore other opportunities. So there has not been a better time to take those ideas that you've got and see if you can make them happen. You've got probably a period of about 2 or 3 months. And the thing is, people are so willing to help. I mean, you've seen it yourself, that people will offer advice and want to be part of your journey. There are people out there in every industry sector, in every walk of life, that would want to help people now. And they've got the time to. They're not commuting to work. You can get hold of anybody now. And I think that's why now is a great time to do it.
Well, that's nice to hear, especially because of the idea behind this podcast being the kind of looking to the future optimistically and positively. I suppose in your last answer, you kind of talked about how for you, you would start your own business and you enjoy that those kind of challenges, but that's not for everyone. But would you have any general advice? So imagine, I don't know, a school leaver or someone that's just finished university. What do you think would be your kind of general advice coming out of this crisis as we emerge? Imagine you're looking for a job. What kind of general advice would you give to people?
Gosh, that's a real tough one. And there are two schools of thought about, are you better to get some, so if you're talking about the graduates, are you better to get some experience in something, or are you better to decide where you want to go and focus on that particular path? If you've got a passion and you want to follow a career path, whatever that career path might be, I would say to you, stick with that, but give yourself a time at which point, if you haven't got where you want to go, then you revisit it. So I would probably say whatever's comfortable for you, maybe 6 months, and you focus 100% on securing a job or experience in your chosen sector. If you don't know what you're going to do, you have no idea, you've done a geography degree and you've come out of university and you have absolutely no idea, then I would say you have to just get on the road, because if you don't get on the road, you're never going to know and find out what's around the corner.
It's interesting that you chose a geography degree. Both of my older brothers did geography and both of them ended up working in finance. So they got on a road and went in that direction. Well, listen, Claire, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate it. I've got a couple of final questions for you that I've been asking to everybody. The first one is, what have you missed the most from before lockdown?
Oh, gosh, you know, that's quite a tough one for me, because I've really enjoyed the focus of the work, because I'm back doing the job again. Before, I was just being the managing director and I wasn't doing the job. And now I'm doing the job. So maybe I'm missing golf. Yeah, because we haven't been able to play golf. Yes, I miss the camaraderie in the office. But because I'm on the phone to people in Zoom, funnily enough, I haven't really missed that. So I don't think actually I'm missing very much.
Right. Okay. Well, you might struggle to answer this one as well then, because my final question is, what's the first thing you'd do tomorrow if all the measures were lifted?
Oh, go out to a nice restaurant.
Oh, that sounds good.
But actually, then I am missing, because I am a bit of a foodie. I love my food. So I certainly, that would be what I would do. I would go out to a really fabulous restaurant, because I have been doing all of the cooking, which I love, but I'd love for somebody else to do the cooking, and I'd have some lovely wine, and I would, yeah, that's what I would do.
Well, that sounds very good. Thank you again, Claire. I really enjoyed speaking to you.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and good luck, Mike. And I really hope that something comes out of this podcast.
Thank you very much for listening to the What Happens Now podcast. The coronavirus outbreak affected us all, and it was responsible for me losing my brand new job as an event director back in March. Because of the date I started, I wasn't eligible to be furloughed, so it really was a slap in the face for me. The positive being that it led to the start of this podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed listening, and if you have, then please visit my GoFundMe page, where you can donate and help support the podcast's future, and also support the NHS. 25% of your donation will go to the NHS Charities Together, which helps them continue to provide £1 million a day to the NHS. Just visit gofundme.com and search for What Happens Now podcast. Thank you.